Ecclesiastes chapter 11, please. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, please. Thursday night, my wife and I, we have neighbors next to us that live just north of us. Carly used to live there, but we ran Carly off, so she doesn't live there anymore. Right, Carly? But the folks right next door to us, and they're Mexican descent. All Mexicans. Spanish is the primary language. So this is about the third time we've done it. We try to have a meal with them. You say, why? Well, it's the whole sermon this morning. We're just trying to build bridges with people. They're nice enough folks. We get along with them fine. I went out and bought some parrillada de carne and de mariscos, fish and meat. And I also bought, you know, rice and beans, arroz y frijoles. And I also bought, by the way, Judy, I go back to you. Thank you, Judy. You're sweet. I got some lumpia, but I made a mistake. There was about 30 people there, more or less, with the kids, maybe more. I got 100 lumpia. Most of them hadn't had lumpia. The lumpia was gone before I got seated. So I should have bought 200 or 300 lumpia. But I had a wonderful time. Can I say something, folks? It's all right to hang out with people who don't look like you and talk like you. It's okay. It's kind of what we're about, I thought. Let's stand. You'll understand why I said that this morning. By the way, I love the Mexican food. I love the lumpia. I didn't get enough lumpia. So, Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 1. Before I say it, we have a young man from our school. I like this young man. He is a very respectful young man, Jesse. Good to see you, buddy. Hesse. I don't know what your mother calls you. Jesse. Jesse's a young man of Honduran descent, correct? And I actually like Jesse. He's pretty nice. So, glad you're here this morning. Chapter 11, verse 1. Cast thy bread upon the waters. By the way, if you read that literally, you're like, why would you put bread on the water? It's going to get soggy and kind of weird. For thou shalt find it after many days. Now, he's giving the same commands using other language now. He says, give a portion to 7 and also to 8, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth, and if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, well, there it shall be. He that observeth, or she, that observes the wind, shall not sow. And he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb to her that is with child, even so, thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. You're not going to understand it all. In the morning, sow thy seed. Now, buddy, he's mixed all kinds of metaphors. Casting bread, giving a portion, seed, harvest. And now he's saying, sow thy seed in the morning and in the evening. Withhold not thine hand. For thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. I'm going to speak this morning and talk about investing life. Investing life. This morning's sermon is so nice and so kind and so extremely difficult because personality and many things come into play. And some of us live very small lives. Look at me. Everything is oriented to me. For a simple reason. We can live that way. By the way, my parents and grandparents could not live that way because everything was with community, because they didn't even have a radio. They didn't have a TV. They didn't have internet. They didn't have a cell phone. So life was communal. Today, everybody, I don't have my phone. Everybody, do you go out into public? We now have a genetic problem. People walk like this even if they don't have their phone. It's like, do you ever like smile at anybody? This morning, we're going to talk about, I think, what the text is talking about. It's not talking about making money. It's talking about investing life, your life. I'm not going to tell you where to invest it. I'm just going to talk about the principles. Let's pray together. Father, help me this morning as I share some very simple ideas, things that we just need to hear, because we have become people enmeshed in craziness. This brother that's here ministering to schools and various police departments, fire departments, I already know much of the depression of young people comes from they don't have a life. Their life is so-called communities online that take them in terrible places, and they don't have the light and hope of the gospel. This morning, Lord, I want to address that in a big way, how we invest our life for the rest of our life. Help me as I speak, I ask in Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. I have to say this, so all of the younger people, please just take a breath. There was a day before the internet. And then there was the internet. Now, I'm no expert on the internet, but I do remember when I came here in 1996, there were no computers in this whole organization except a, are you guys ready? A 386 in Bambi's office that didn't function. Don Tice was old school, probably didn't trust computers. That was the norm. They liked everything physical. So we started getting computers, and I still remember, I cannot make the noise. Can anybody? We had 50, was it 56.6? Some of you are looking at me like I'm from outer space. All I know is it did this. And then it made all kinds of weird noises, and you kind of got online. Anybody remember those days? Thank you. For you young people, you're like, well, internet, that just comes with my birth. I was born, you know, I am therefore internet. No. 1996, I became the pastor here in the spring. So internet actually came online in 95, 96 nationally. Now, it was here long before. When I was working in, when I was in Bible college, working in a hospital setting, Dr. Duren was in the original internet. And by the way, Al Gore didn't invent it. It was military. He had a brother in, I don't know what, he was a Marine in intelligence. And they, you know what they did on the internet back in the 80s? Play chess. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, I came here in 96. In 1995, right at the beginning of the internet and into 96, a new corporation was formed. In 1997, that corporation went public as an IPO. In 1998, it made another big step forward. It went from only selling books to selling CDs and DVDs. And then in the year 2000, it started selling everything. By the way, I'm looking around here. Most of you don't remember that that organization called Amazon only sold books. Well, that's not my story. My story is a person I knew that was somewhat more into the business world than me. He would constantly tell me, you know that Amazon is 3 years old and hasn't made a nickel and they're losing money. He used to say this to me every week. I don't know why he was fixated on Amazon. It's never going to work. Well, several years, it wasn't exactly in 2000, but as things progressed, they went from no profit to, let me ask you a question. If you would have known, would you like to have bought in 1997 at the IPO? Yes or no? Yes. By the way, what's the problem? You don't know. Now we're going to go into the text. By the way, this is a text-based message. I am not one of these fancy preachers that just tells stories and makes little bullet points. We're dealing with the Word of God, so let's be serious. Steve, if you will put the next button on the board, please. I say this is not a text to teach us how to invest in the stock market, though some of the ideas would be similar. It's actually about what we don't know, which I find very interesting. In verse 2, he says, "For thou knowest not what evil shall come upon the earth." In verse 5, it says, "And thou knowest not the way of the Spirit, or how the bones do grow in the womb of her that was with child. Even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all." Verse 6, just a highlighted portion, "Thou knowest not whether it shall prosper either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good." So this whole passage is really not about, here's a secret of investing. It's actually saying, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff you don't know, you can't know. But then the text is about investing. It uses words like bread, and that's kind of odd. Now, you can manipulate this around to make this a text about investment, but I think he's using language. Let me slow down. Give us this day our... There's not a person in this room that thinks of your life as daily bread because you live in this modern age. In the ancient world, remember the Romans, if you were a Roman citizen in Rome, your daily bread, if you were a Roman citizen in Rome, was given to you. That was the big staple of life, and everything else was added to it. He's telling us that which is essential to life, invest. He tells us about a portion. He doesn't really mention what portion of what. A portion of something, invest. He talks about sowing and reaping. He talks about seed. So in my way of looking at this text, which, by the way, I think it's what the text is about, and you're behind me, is this. Investing, what matters in life. Or maybe best of all, investing life itself. Although we don't know many things, including the future, we cannot withdraw and live for ourselves, either one. Some people live like a little turtle. They withdraw into their little shell, and they reach out and grab things. Dave was talking about this in Sunday school. Everything is just for me, for me. That's not a way that a believer lives. Actually, all of chapter 11 is going to focus on this, and this has been going on with the many passages about enjoy what God gives you from chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 5, chapter 7, chapter 9, chapter 11. The whole chapter deals with God's given you this. Learn to enjoy it. You need to invest it. So that's what I'm talking about this morning, investing life, that which is central. All right, verse 1 and 2 says this. Cast thy bread, that which is essential to life, upon the waters. I don't think literally. I don't think it's literally talking about bread or casting bread on the water, which would disappear. He's saying, cast that which is essential in your life upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Now, verse 2, give a portion to 7 and also to 8. For thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. My first idea this morning is simply to invest. You say, Pastor, what do you mean by invest? Everyone look at me. I don't care who you are. This is what I mean for you. But I'm tricking you intentionally in the beginning. I'm going to do preacherisms, and then I'm going to talk about what I mean. Okay? Every Baptist pastor is going to say things like this. You need to invest by teaching a Sunday school class, and that's good. You need to work in a lawn. That's good. You need to support missions. That's good. You need to go on a mission trip. That's good. But I think this passage steps back from just that to how about this? Invest life. Do something with what God has given you. How about this? Build a family. Finish a degree. Plant a garden. Build a business. Help in a pregnancy center. Take a class. Learn a language. Can I say this to you? There are far too many people not living anymore. Their life is entertainment. Or worse, internet. We just live in this bubble, whatever our bubble is. You talk to people, you bump into them, and they only have one thing, sports. It's like, okay, I like sports. That's good, but that's one little piece of life. What about learning a different language? What about taking some classes to increase, investing in life, investing your life in life? How about reaching out to your neighbor? How about, man, there's just a million things. Invest, invest, invest. Cast your bread. Give a portion. Do something more than everything, like a little turtle that crawls up under its shell and always just gets something for. What a miserable way to live. Yesterday, I have to be very careful with this. Yesterday, this isn't religion. You're the only one that knows. My daughter doesn't know. I don't think, unless you told her. Yesterday was our family reunion down in southwestern Illinois. Obviously, I didn't go. You say, why? Don't think I want to travel 5 or 6 hours one way with my knee. So I talked to my family, and some of the other family said, this year, we're not coming. So I talked to my little sister, who was there. Let's see if all of you can wake up here. My sister told me who was there. And then she says, I need to tell you some bad news. One of your aunts has died. Is that big news to you? Well, it is to me. That was my whole world as a kid, my family, big family. One of the aunts has died. I'll call her Susie. When Susie's husband died, I call him Billy, my Uncle Billy. Don't have an Uncle Billy. I call him Billy. When Uncle Billy died, that wicked aunt would not have a funeral for him because she didn't want the family at the funeral. By the way, she didn't have a funeral either. She died unmourned. Did you hear me? No funeral, no one mourning, no one missing her, no one loving her, because she spent a lifetime like a little bitty. You ever see a turtle? Tortuga? A pagong? Have you ever seen a turtle reaching out? But if you, they'll skip back. Everything is me. The Bible says, by the way, God's given you a life. He's given you all this. Invest it. Invest it in 10,000 ways. Is that simple? Cast your bread upon the water. Give a portion. Learn to invest yourself. Of course, teaching Sunday school is beautiful. Working in Awana is beautiful. Supporting missions is beautiful. Going on a mission trip is beautiful. So is finishing a degree. So is anything that's not about you, that's investing. Number two, we go back to verse one. Cast thy bread upon the waters. Why? For thou shalt find it after many days. What does that mean? Number two, invest for the future. Obviously, folks, you don't invest for the 5 seconds of gratification right now. All things you do. I've been pastoring here for almost 30 years. I've been teaching Bible for almost 30 years. I have challenged kids in my Bible class. Learn a language you don't know. Do you know what most of them look like? They look like you. Why would I do that? Well, you wouldn't do it for right now. You would do it for the future. You invest, friends, for the future. You just never know where this is going to show up, how this is going to help you down the road. Now, I'm going to say something funny. I already know it's true. We don't have a lot of people. That's kind of weird. I don't know how I became one of the older people here. That is wrong. Years ago, 53, I was a sophomore in high school. And because my name ended with a W, they gave all the classes that people asked for to people before the W's in the public high school. And I came up with, no joke, I remember getting my schedule and said, well, I didn't sign up. What? I signed up for a class. I didn't sign up for it. They signed me up. You say, what was the class? Chemistry? No. Algebra? No. Are you guys ready? Typing. Now, can I say this? If you're under 60, probably you almost have to be 70 to know what I'm talking about. You two will know. Pam will know. Males didn't take typing at that time. That was reserved for women that were going to go into a secretarial career. I walked into that class. There was another guy named Terry Wedding in the class too. Two guys. By the way, I didn't want to be in that class. That was what women, forgive me, that's what women did. They took typing. What was the other thing? Shorthand. Shorthand. There's not a person in this room even knows what I'm talking about with shorthand, hardly. You took it probably. You probably had to take it. But kids today, it's like, shorthand? What's that? I went into the class and the woman looked at us and I remember, first day, you're not supposed to be here. Well, thank you very much and welcome to you too. I didn't have a choice. They stuck me in the dumb class. You say, were you any good? I'm going to be factual. On a manual typewriter, and I just put myself in the dark ages. I could type over 60 words a minute on a manual typewriter. I was actually pretty good. Clanging, clanging, and clanging. Then we really stepped up second semester, electric typewriter. I don't remember what it was, but I could type well. Are you ready for this? In high school, I received 2 C's. One of them was my first semester of English, the last time I got a C, and one of them was typing. And I stand here before you, look at me. See, some of you don't get this. People my age and above, have you ever watched them type? Oops, wrong, you know. I know how to type. I joined the United States Navy, and the first thing they asked me, I still remember, I go to Bethesda, they say, how many of you can type? I said, I can type. Come up here. I worked for BUMED and BUPERS back in for 2 weeks. And then I went to the laboratory. We had computers my whole life. I'm an old man that can type from a class I didn't want to take. By the way, invest. But you don't invest for right now. You invest for the... You say, well, I don't want to learn a language. Listen, if I was young and not so lazy, first thing I do is learn another language or two. You say, what would you learn? Well, by the way, if you already learned Spanish, you already know Spanish, you can do Italian easily. You can do French. Nobody wants to do French. Let's skip French. You know, Linda's going to kill me. Sorry, Linda. Sorry. My point is what? Learn another language. You say, what am I going to do with it? Who knows? By the way, your friend, Cindy Seabolt, her friend went to be with the Lord last year. Cindy grew up in a pastor's home. By the way, Cindy's maiden name, Achtung, good German name. Her dad was a church planter in Minnesota and Wisconsin. He got killed in a car wreck, mom and dad gone, when she was a teenager. Cindy grew up, are you ready? In Brazil. She spoke Portuguese fluently. She grew up with her older brother because the parents had died. And guess what? When she grew up, she never would have guessed she could work for a corporation who needed somebody who spoke Portuguese and English. By the way, folks, you invest for the future. Don't mess around with your life saying, I hate this. Get out of your little shell. Start living your life. God has things for you to be, things for you to become. I don't know what those are. Whatever they are, if you're a believer, get out and invest. Short story. My dad always liked this story, so I'll tell it. I don't know all the details, and I freely confess to you that I don't understand the Army. I'm a Navy guy. The Army is weird for Navy guys. 1945, my dad arrived in Europe. When Dad got into Europe, the war was either right over, about to get over, within weeks, the war was over. And then they started, in case you don't know, Dad was 16 and a half, and he was thinking Japan, the invasion of Japan. They came and they did this. I don't know how big the group was. He was in the First Army. The group, I don't know if it was hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands. They walked out and they just said a question. How many of you men can read and write? Now, by the way, I have uncles who couldn't read and write. I would tell you this. There are males in this church and broader church that cannot read and write. in the way that I understand reading, can't read a book, which to me means you're illiterate. Dad had third grade education. All of three grades. But I want to say this, from the day I was born till the day my dad died, my dad was a vociferous reader. When I was a boy, he read the Alton Evening Telegraph, which was not one of the tabloid, but the one that had the fold. It had four or five sections. He would take a section. I would try to slip in and steal the section that had the comics and the sports, because he did this. He read everything on the front page, folded it. He read the entire page, every page in the newspaper every day. Now I'm going to tell you the story. Can you read and write? Dad stepped forward. Most of the guys didn't. They said, if you can read and write, you ready? You don't have to go to Japan. The happiest day of my dad's life. He had some shootouts in Germany, but he didn't have to go. We never invaded Japan, he thought. You say, what happened to him? He was at the Nuremberg trials because he was an MP who could read and write. And then he got to drive a Jeep for the military governor of Austria. He learned German. Hello? I can't hear you. He learned German in Austria. Well, is Austrian German German? Karen, yeah, that's one of those debatable things. But he learned German. By the way, just because he could read. You say, I don't want to invest. I just want to live a life about me. Welcome to reality, turtle. You're going to be a miserable person. You're going to make everybody around you miserable, because the more life is not about you, it's about investing in a thousand ways. Yes, Sunday school. Yes, Awana, of course. Yes, a pregnancy center. Yes, missions. Yes, a missions trip. Yes, in your neighbor. Maybe building some bridges with your, it can be done in a thousand ways. Yes, taking a course. Yes, getting a degree. Yes, taking another degree. Yes, just doing things, because it's all about the future. Well, that's the second point. It's pretty straightforward. Well, I'll move through the third point quickly. Number three, if you look at verse 2, give a portion to 7 and also to 8. I think number 3, it simply means this: not only invest for the future, but you also invest widely. It does not say give a portion to 1 and then to 2. Some people pull back. They live a turtle life. Everything is inside their little shell. Everything is about them. That's a miserable way to live. No believer wants to live that way. No believer can live that way. Some also invest only in themselves. So they would give a portion to themselves and to whoever's on their team, whoever that is. They have a team. You know, they don't. It's not everybody. It's just their team. Solomon is saying, listen, invest not in 1 or 2, not in me and mine. How about 7 and 8? Just invest widely. I want to ask you a question. How many of you like for someone to know your name? Can you raise your hand? Do you like, by the way, I don't know everybody's name here this morning. I look around the room. By the way, with great pain, I can look around this room and I know who some of you are, but I don't know your name. Do you like people to know your name? I got a question. Do you think other people like you to know their name? You can invest so much and so widely by getting outside of yourself, building a small bridge to another person. You don't have any mercenary things in mind. You're not trying to get something. You're not trying to manipulate. You're just, well, I like people to know me. I like to know them. You know, hello, your name, my name. I look around this room. There's a couple over here, lovely couple. I feel bad for their children because they have really bad influences in Jesse and Evie, but, you know, that's okay. Melanie, I finally got your name, and I have your husband's name this morning, Ryan. I'm hoping I can catch both names. Can I say this? You don't know how much that bothers me, because I know how important it is. Look at me, friend. You invest. You invest for the future. You say, well, I sent money to a missionary, and don't worry about that. It's all future, throwing it to the future. And you invest widely. You don't do mercenary things. It's not what's in it for me. It's not how does it benefit me. By the way, it will benefit you. Dave, where'd Dave go? Dave, you were talking about investing in people. Can I say this to you, friend? You're talking about older men investing in younger people. You know who'd be the best beneficiary in the long run? The older guy. But an older, oh no, I don't talk to anybody about anything. That's a turtle life. And I'm not picking on anybody. That's living a life under a shell. By the way, learn to invest in people. It's beautiful. I had a guy say this, and I heard this again recently. I was talking to a Filipina, let me think, 40 years ago nearly. She was dating a white guy, which is fine. And I was talking to her about Christianity, and I wanted to talk to her boyfriend or whatever he was at the time. And she said to me, it's just one of those, like, that would be a deal breaker for me. She said, I don't know his name. She said, he said to me, I don't want to know anything unless it makes me money. Oh, by the way, this young lady is a doctor today. Wonder why he wanted to marry her. I mean, that's creepy. So here it is. Invest. Invest not for now, not for the past, but for the future. You never know what's going to happen, what God is going to do with this. Always doing that in the future. Thirdly, you invest widely. There's lots of good things that you can be doing, positive, helpful. My goodness, lots of it. Do it. Well, number four. Can I ask you a question? Is this in the text? Yes or no? Yes or no? Cast your bread upon the water. Why? Because you don't know what's going to happen down the road. It'll come back to you. What else? Give a portion to not one, not you, not two, you and yours, but seven and eight. Pass it around. Invest widely. Number four is the harder part. It's a very difficult thing. And it's where four and five, we can get absolutely paralyzed. Verse 2 says this, give a portion to seven and also to eight. Why? He tells us why. For thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. You say, what does that mean? You don't know what's going to happen. Verse 3, if the clouds, and this is a weird verse, but it makes perfect sense once you grasp the contrast. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. Well, that's a deep. You look up there and the clouds are dripping water. Sooner or later, they're going to rain. Okay. Got it? He's giving you that juxtaposition again. There's things you're not going to know. You're not going to understand what exactly is always going to happen. But on the other side, the clouds are full of rain, it rains. Next. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. In your notes, I say this, there are two competing ideas. And by the way, this fourth point is we invest with limited knowledge and limited control. Emily, is Emily in here? Did you have a class for the ladies about control to some degree? Or you guys skipped the control part because you didn't want to get into that conflict? Do any of you have control issues? I asked you a question. How many of you like it when you don't know what's going to happen? By the way, some people plan a vacation. They have to plan every 5-minute increment of the vacation. And if that gets out of whack, the world ends. By the way, I get it. Good luck in life. Why? He says very clearly, he says this. Verse 2, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. You just don't know everything. So you have to invest. You have to put yourself out there. You say, Pastor Warren, I want to learn, let's say, throw out a language, Russian. I don't know why you want to learn Russian. Maybe you do. Does that mean in the future God's going to use this? The answer is you have no idea. First of all, just learning the language would be good for you. Learning about other cultures would be good for you. It doesn't have to be useful. I don't know if it will work or not. There are actually two competing ideas in the text. These ideas kind of clash each other. The first one is this. We don't know what evil will happen. We cannot predict the future. We just can't. All right. Can I say this to all the people over 60 minimally, probably near my age? the largest corporation or one of the largest corporations in America from the 1800s up until, have you ever heard of it? Sears? How would you like to invest in Sears today? All right, how about 1890? By the way, Sears dominated the world. You could buy a house from Sears. People bought houses from Sears that you put together where you lived. Sears was Amazon. Folks, you don't know what's going to happen. You got two problems. You don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you know some things, and that's what I say in your note, in the notes. We do know some basic ideas or principles. I'm going to say it another way, and then I'm going to talk about a guy that we saw this week in my Bible class. Let me ask you a question. When do you plant corn in the Midwest? Speak. When do you plant corn in the Midwest? December? In the spring. By the way, it might be March, might be April, according to where you live. Yes or no? So you know something about planting. When do you harvest? October-ish, maybe late September, maybe October, maybe a little bit November, again, according to where you live. This passage tells us that we must invest with limited knowledge, but in limited control, but we do have some knowledge. We know that if the clouds are full, it's going to rain. We know if you plant corn in the spring, there's at least a pretty good possibility that you can harvest in the fall. We also know if you don't plant corn in the spring, you're not getting corn in the fall. Duh. Invest with limited knowledge and limited control. This week, I've had two people, I want to get a third one at least, come into my Bible class and talk about graduating from our high school and where they're at today. I had my son come in. He has a circuitous route to what he does, totally different than anything he ever thought he would do. And this week I had one of our young guys, he graduated in 2004, because the year before you, 2 years after John, Darian Coleman. Darian Coleman was in the same high school class as this young lady's daughter, Dr. Scary Carey. He was in the same class as the Vasilovich's son, Justin Vasilovich. Darian was always a nice kid. Can I say this to you? Goofball. Goofball. Not a bad goofball, by the way. Just a goofball. He was about like me in high school, you know, bouncing off walls, having fun, like life, likes people. Darian bounced around for a while. It was interesting. He's quoting me in Bible class, but here's my point. Somewhere along the line, Darian started working for physical therapy, and he was no degree, low man on the totem pole. You know what he discovered? He liked this. He liked working with people. He liked helping people. He likes people. And then he said, but if I really want to do this well, I need to go back to school and get a degree so I make more money. By the way, friends, you don't always know when you're 18 what you're going to do. Here's my recommendation. Move forward. You say, go to college. Yes. For many of us, go to CLC. You can stay home. You can be part of church. You can be part of the family. You get your first 2 years so your parents aren't broke. My other recommendations, go to Bob Jones. Go to Maranatha. Go to Pensacola. Go to one of the Christian colleges. If your parents are independently wealthy, that's a different story. Can I say this to you? Vast majority of people that get a degree don't use that degree in exactly what they do in 20 years. Here's Darian. Darian comes in and he says, I do home health care rehab. He said how many patients he sees a day. He loves it. He says, I set my own schedule so he could come over and talk in the class. I make a good living. And I'm like, yes, how do you know that when you begin? Here's what you do. You just invest. You invest, listen, for the future. You invest widely. You don't just invest your life in one little thing that's all about you. You invest your life widely. Life, by the way, is your money, your ability, your time, all of those things. And you always invest with limited knowledge and limited control. Please look at me if I'm boring you. the number one statement in this these six verses is what you don't know. And there, by the way, God knows. Do you think Charlie Kirk knew that somebody was going to murder him? By the way, you think God knew? I think God was probably in control of things. As hard as that is to accept when you see that beautiful young lady and those beautiful children, I think that just, but let me just say this, friend. I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. You must invest with the limited knowledge. You know some things. You plant corn in the spring, you reap it in the fall. You know that. You know, if a tree falls here, it's going to stay here. You know, if there's rain, if the clouds are full, they're going to rain. I mean, you know some things. You just don't know everything, but you invest. Well, we continue. Verse 4 and verse 5. I hope you're actually reading the text. This is not a time of being cute. Verse 4. He or she, obviously, that observeth the wind, what? You're never going to invest anything. And he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. As thou knowest not the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. My fourth and fifth point, excuse me, is just invest. You cannot do this. I'm going to sit down for a moment. No, I'm doing all right. I can make it. I'm going to see if I can speak to some of you about life. When you become a pastor that is awake and knows people, and I am one of those. I had a lady in my church in St. Louis. She lived on one portion of television, the weather report. And I don't know where she found this information, but if it was supposed to snow 1/4 inch, she would call me and say, Pastor, I can't make it to work today because it's supposed to snow 2 feet. She lived her, look at me. If you observe the wind, if you, do you know who you is? If you have to have it all figured out before you do it, you will never do anything. You just have to invest. By the way, you just have to move forward. This thing of, I got to be in control and I got to have it all figured out. Can I say this? There's people in this room that are in a mess. You have 50 problems in your life and you have done nothing about them because you don't know what's going to happen. Well, I do know this. If you do nothing, that's exactly what's going to happen. You just got to step out. You got to invest. The person that observes the wind never does anything. The person is looking at the weather, oh, it might rain. Really? You say, Pastor Warren, it might get cold this winter. Can I be honest with you? This is for Joseph over here. I am praying that we have a Chicago weather this year. I'm tired of whatever we've had for the last 2 years. I want some, by the way, I want something about 27 below. So you all feel it for a day or two. I want you to see what I'm talking about. But Fan will not be complaining. She'll be gone. My goodness. You say, Pastor, what's going to hit? Oh, shut up. You're never going to live if you live this way. No wonder why you haven't ever done anything. You're so afraid of everything. And the author says, listen, look what it says. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. In just the last part, three times he tells us what we don't know. He says, you know what? You don't know the works of God who maketh all. You're not going to figure it out. That's not your job. Your job is not to be God. Your job is just to keep investing. In your notes or behind me, I say this. We call this the paralysis of analysis. And boy, I am an analytical person. We can get locked and loaded in our analysis. I say this in your notes. There are things we don't know. Just assume it. Spending a lifetime figuring it out and trying to figure it out is not helpful. Caution is what? By the way, friends, I am not good at business, but I'm cautious. But I'm not hyper-cautious. Pastor Warren, what if the world ended? You know, we have people that the whole, come on, you have to keep moving forward. You must invest. I say this, caution is good. Absolute caution strangles you. Now, I'm going to talk real quickly about something that's personal to me, not me, about me. A young couple back in the 70s went to a Christian college that no longer exists, Tennessee Temple University. They were cornbread people. Do you know what a cornbread person is? You know, Midwesterner, farm boy. I think she was a farm girl from the great state of Illinois. And when I say the great state of Illinois, everything but the governor in Chicago, okay? Everything else is good. I'm joking. Take a deep breath. They went to Tennessee Temple. By the way, I can promise you this. Nobody would have predicted in the 70s that Tennessee Temple wouldn't even exist today. No one could have predicted that Trinity Seminary would not exist today. You can't live your life like that. But anyhow, this young couple, they wanted to serve the Lord, and they got this idea in their mind that they wanted to serve the Lord with Native American peoples. So back in the 70s, they decided to go to Canada, and they worked for a few years, I think 5 years, at some sort of a camp in Canada, mostly Native American people, and then they did the dumbest thing I have ever heard. They moved 10 hours straight a day. Have you lived in Bemidji, Minnesota? Is it a warm place in the wintertime? Yeah, nice place to visit in the summer. They live Winnipeg, 10 hours straight north. Or 30. And by the way, that's almost at the tree line. If you go much further, there's just snow and ice. I talked to them this week. This is for all of the members that know them. They haven't been here in a while. I'm going to say this carefully. They're not getting any younger. I said, Kathy, how long have you been at South Indian Lake? She said, 41 years. By the way, Jim Fawn, you might know. I don't know. They never had children. Was that intentional, or they couldn't have children? So here you have a lovely couple. They wanted to have children like normal people. God didn't give them children. They live in a place that nobody wants to say. You say, why did you talk to them? How many of you knew about the smoke we had down here this year? That came from, it came from where they're from. They had come to Illinois to do something for a week or two. They were heading back home. The fire started. They had not been in their place till this week. Now, they had a little problem, so I'm sharing some details that all of you need to hear. When they left, everything was fine, and they came back 4 months later, no electricity. The telephone poles had been burnt down, 140 of them, down the road. They did get electricity back. What happens to your food in your refrigerator? Let me ask you a second. What happens to stuff that's been 4 months? Yes, I mean, the health people said, do this. Throw everything out, including the refrigerator and the freezer. Just so you know, we save money to invest in missions like this. They got money for a brand new freezer and a brand new refrigerator from our church. That's what we put money aside for. Can I say this to you? There's a bigger problem. They can't get one person to move up there to pastor for them. Who wants to live 10 hours or some ridiculous amount of time so far? By the way, he writes me sometimes, say, yeah, it was 60 below today. And you're complaining about zero. 60 below? Yeah, and that's the days he doesn't go hunting. You're weird. You're bizarre. He has a problem, friend. He's invested his whole life in a community of First Peoples of Canada. His whole life they've invested there. They don't even know if anybody will replace them. By the way, why? You just invest. You just invest. Don't worry about that. You can't control it anyhow. You give God what you have. Well, we're going to close this morning quickly. The last point, chapter 11, verse 6 says this. In the morning, sow thy seed. In the evening, withhold not thy hand. Why? For thou knowest, back to that knowledge again, thou knowest not whether it shall prosper this or that, whether they both shall be alike good. My last statement is always be investing. Friend, I'm going to close the story. We're not going to look at the last verses, Steve. Everybody look at me. I read to my children when they were young. Now, I confess I had certain books I like more than others. My favorite book, Amy, what's my favorite book? Jen Rush, you know what my favorite book is. Green Eggs and Ham. Would you like them in a box? Would you like them with a fox? I would not like them in a box. I would not like, you know, the whole back and forth. A dumb story goes over and over until finally he tastes it. And he's like, I like green eggs and ham. Can I tell you what God says to do? Always be investing. You say, what does that mean? Do it in the morning. Do it at lunch. Do it at night. Listen, do it here. Do it there. Do it everywhere. That's what it says. Look at me. Quit. Some of you are so much of a turtle, you don't even recognize it. Get out there. By the way, I'm not telling you what to do with your money. There's no guilt here. It's called live your life. The one God's given you. Invest. Don't wait around till you got it all figured out. Oh, you'll never figure it out. Always be investing. Do it in the morning. Do it in the evening. Do it here. Do it there. Do it up. Do it down. Do it when you feel like it. Do it when you don't feel like it. Do it with a fox. Do it in a box. Always investing. Father, thank you for this time. Bless our time together this morning. Lord, my desire is simple. I'm not looking for any specific thing. I'm looking for 1,000 specifics where people start looking at their life for the whatever time God has for them is a way of investing for the future. You never know where it's going to show up. You never know how it's going to help. That person that you help in a Sunday school class, maybe they get saved. Maybe they don't become a murderer. Just because they met somebody that was kind and loving and nice, Lord, there's so much opportunity. Teach us to invest our life. This I ask in Christ's name. Amen. Let's stand, please.